Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I just called to say I love you.
It's a 2:07. Horrible night in St. Paul. Adam covering it. Rest of the news team covering it all day. They're all incredible losses to people close. It's raising many questions again about our two major cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the safety. Melvin Carter and Todd Extel expected to meet the media 3:00. I know you've it's been a lead part of your newscast, too. It's the one that I think stands out to a lot of us. A person hears a car accident. Here's a car accident. I honestly don't know, Adam, what percentage of people would then automatically get up and go check on it. I still think the majority would.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say vast majority.
You go out there and you get killed because you're checking on another vehicle that has been rear-ended. Now, if you thought you were in an area where there's been trouble lately, maybe you would. Maybe you still would. Maybe it's in an area where there haven't been any issues. But three people in that short a time. We spent a lot of time right before the fair talking about the city of Minneapolis. And I know there was another poll which came out in the last couple weeks where 63% of those poll want more police in the city of Minneapolis. I know in St. Paul, the police chief is not very happy with the number of police officers that has been suggested in the upcoming budget. These may be incidents where you'd say it doesn't matter unless you literally had somebody these locations already. And how are you going to know that a random accident is going to involve someone who's just going to turn and shoot and kill an innocent person who's trying to help out? Is there any doubt this is the biggest challenge for Mayor Carter so far? He's had different issues. But has he had something like this? Am I forgetting?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think he's had anything close to this. The police chief hasn't had something close to this. And you know, so often whether it's Melvin Carter, Jacob Fry, or take your pick of all the previous mayors of those two cities or elsewhere, when you have fatalities, it's unacceptable. We'll track these folks down. We will make sure that you know that this city is as safe as it can be. But this is the 19th fatality in St. Paul already here, and as we're not even at the middle of September. As someone who knows St. Paul better than I right now, because you're in that area, do you think safety issues in St. Paul are not getting the proper amount of conversation they should be getting in the Twin Cities? Or are we in this area where we potentially are just overreacting to just this horrific 18-hour period of yesterday?
No, it's probably gone under the radar, especially because it's been violent here in Minneapolis, too.
Yeah.
But last week we had an off-duty firefighter shot and killed in his home.
That's right.
Haven't had any arrests for that yet. And this Good Samaritan one, it sounds like the shooter was lying in wait in the car, and when the guy opens the car, he's shot. I mean,
what a chilling situation.
Yeah.
Right? You're doing what you're supposed to do.
I guess it is under the radar just because of what's been happening on this side of the river, too. But
Blois checking, and Blois is making a very good point. He points out that here you are the day after, And both of them are appearing at a press conference. And at times, that hasn't happened in Minneapolis. That certainly didn't happen all the time with Betsy Hodges. And I don't personally think Jacob Fry has been as visible as he should be also. And everybody keeps raving about Chief Arredondo, but his visibility in no ways, to me, is what it should be when it's getting them out, not just on our show, but we've tried many, many times, but elsewhere. That, I mean, we saw that debate when you had Harto and Hodges, when literally Harto had to get an okay from the Hodges office. Harto was more visible than Arredondo is. So the fact that you have the police chief, Carter, disagreeing with the mayor about the size of the police force, and then you have this particular 18-hour incident, I think it's going to be pretty interesting when they're asking the police chief, what does this say about your views? Because he's like, oh, no, I don't agree with this. You know, more often than not, in our two biggest towns, wouldn't you say that the mayor and the police chief at least publicly stay together? That you have good reporting at times that will point out when they're struggling behind the scenes. But I'll be very curious how that might play out. Because you remember many times in either city over the years?
Oh, yeah, and it's been Minneapolis. I mean, there's been times where clearly they aren't together on things.
Well, where they're appearing together. That's what I'm saying. Because both have different views. Carter's pulling back on the numbers and Axtell's questioning him. You're right. Many times we've had differences. But I just wonder how often it's played out, you know, right there. Because that's a fair question today, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
When they've had – what else – I mean, knowing Melvin Carter's career, what else do you expect him to say today? I mean, is this a day when policies, different changes are unveiled? I really don't think so. Because people obviously also want to know, is there any tie to these, right? Just like – when we had at the end of the state fair, was there any tie to those? And that question was being raised and never really was answered, right?
No, we don't know the answer to that. So I would imagine there's something, I mean, not like hard concrete policy change, but they must be announcing something, I would think.
Yeah, maybe that's possible. If you want to chime in on this topic, you can always text us at any point, 651-989-9226. Obviously, our news department will follow what takes place at the press conference, expected to take place at 3, and we'll report on it all afternoon long during Paul and Jordana's show. Don't forget the Twins and the Nationals. H. Lake in first pitch starts off our coverage at 6. So yesterday we had the story about Tickle Me Elmo and what was taking place in Times Square, grabbing a 14-year-old. And the backside. It then turned in, because I think as Adam, don't you, Dan, in a conversation about furries.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he asked the question, so that led to the conversation.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't as much about furries, you know, and Adam's sexual peccadillos. This is about the number of problems people have had.
It's an underrated word, by the way.
With peccadillos?
Yes.
Yeah. Carter, spell peccadillos for us.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Sounds like an animal.
Yeah. Sounds like something you try to kill and
or dress up like.
And then place over the head of Ryan and it might fall on his head, you know, and he's calling in to ask Adam anything. 47%, I repeat, 47% of New Yorkers say they had an unpleasant interaction with one of the costume characters and street hustlers Times Square. See, when it gets to street hustlers, that broadens it out, and then it doesn't surprise me quite as much. I wanted it to be 47% of New Yorkers had a problem with various people dressed up in costumes.
Like, as in being assaulted having a problem?
No, I'm not encouraging that.
It kind of sounded like that's what you were saying.
But, Adam, did you want to hear that? I mean, like, you know, Big Bird is confronting people and... You know,
that's what I want to hear. That's why I want video of that.
Oscar the Grouch is just, he's more than grocery. I do have a question on this, too, while we're talking about get back to the story. It's the same idea. When I traveled recently to Seattle, la-di-da, they've got a lot of the guys in the bike. You sit in the back, and he'll drive you around town, especially down by the water. We don't have a lot of that in downtown, do we? Where it's the bike cab slash?
The pedicab?
Yeah, I think we do.
We have.
Especially during the games.
Yeah.
Got exactly. A lot of them driving around.
I'm going to say compared to Seattle, we don't.
Well, and that's just, I've never,
right, right.
Seen there. I was coming out of the ballpark Friday night, and there was like half a dozen of them on that corner.
Right, are there that many? Okay.
Right from where that Rod
Cruz. And are they all sponsored mainly by one business?
By one of the strip clubs, yeah.
Yeah, by Spearmint Rhino.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to me? Why Spearmint Rhino has decided this is where, this is our, you know, we could advertise various places, but we think the bike cabs are the way to go.
Well, if the bike cabs are concentrated around sporting events, and the primary consumer of a sporting event is an adult male, then there's your audience.
But it's not just for games. It's, if I see one in the middle of the day.
In Seattle or
here? No, here. Yeah. Here. And it's 12 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
It's still Spearmint Rhino.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not just, you know, a 42-year-old guy who's after the Vikings game and wants to go to O'Donovan's and then wants to head over to Spearmint Rhino. But with Seattle, Carter, they had the bike cab guys all dressed as various superheroes. So Batman, Avenger, you name it. I'm there. This is when we went to this convention to try to figure out Q's health. Two of them, I was able to take a picture. No problem sending back Q. Batman literally looked away and gave me the daily, like told me to go away.
It would have been great if he gave you the thumbs down like the guy at the fair.
Or the finger.
Well, that too.
I mean, Carter, you're Batman. Did this guy think I had to pay him money?
Yes, that's what. I mean, that's how it is in Vegas. You got all those people standing on, and they want money to take a picture with them.
If, like, you're really unique and you're, like, the greatest Trump impersonator, I got it. You're in a Batman costume, okay? You're not that unique. Okay, back to New York here. 22% of city residents say they had a bad experience, including unwanted physical contact with these individuals in Times Square. I thought Times Square has been cleaned up. The times I travel to Times Square, it seems like, I mean, there's Applebee's around there. If I live there, I'm really happy. I kind of miss a little bit of the grittiness of Times Square. That's a lot easier for me to say when I occasionally travel there. Do you want Times Square to go back to where it was, Carter?
Maybe halfway in between.
Yeah, maybe halfway in between with less of the folks having problems. A swimming topic, and I'll remind you, we're going to talk about Flint, Michigan, and a very interesting frontline follow-up to that tragedy, which is still unfolding. So this is a school, Anchorage, and the teenage, it's a female swimmer. She had won easily the 100-meter freestyle, okay? Gets a rile across town. But as soon as she stepped out, guess what? She learned she had been disqualified. Her swimsuit was exposing too much of her butt. The referee's call, which is now under investigation, has generated debate in Alaska's close-knit swim and dive community. I get the impression all of them in the swimming area are close-knit communities, Carter, don't you think?
Yes.
Okay. The coach is saying all these girls are wearing suits that are cut the same way. And the only girl gets disqualified is a mixed-race girl with rounder, curvier features. She's got a booty. Okay. This is absurd. The teenager didn't pick out the suit. Her school picked it for her. And even though all the young women on the team dressed identical, she was the only one cited for a uniform violation. A person who's working as official during the meet told the Daily News that another female ref explained that the bottom of the girl's suit was too far up. She froze into disbelief, she said, and warned the referee, who has not been identified, this is going to blow up. The coach said she was angry at the treatment of the teenager, which she describes as literally the nicest young lady you want to meet. It wasn't the first time the girl had been made to feel that her curvier figure was problematic. Last year, a parent took a photo of her backside and shared it with other parents to demonstrate the girls on the team what was inappropriate swimwear. Over the years, one-piece swimsuits traditionally worn by competitive female singers have been phased out in favor of higher style cuts. Are you bleeping kidding me? The kid's got a butt. Who cares? And so because she's got a booty, and when she's swimming really fast, and apparently the best, so she must be going pretty quick, the swimsuit rode up a little bit. That's happened to about, everyone who's ever swam. And considering 99% of us have never swam this effectively or this quickly, we're going to punish her by disqualifying her?
Unless you can show there's some sort of serious competitive advantage, and let's be honest, you can't. This is a complete joke.
Carter, you're a big former swimming official. It's a part of your life you kind of run from a little bit. You want to defend your fellow brethren of swimming officials on this one?
No, it's uncomfortable even talking about it. It's like they're swimsuits. So get over it.
I mean, honestly, you know what the referee looks for? Do you jump in too early? And who touches the wall first? That's it. Not if the swimsuit shows a little bit more booty. Fire the refs and give her the title back. So it has been 5 years since the Flint water crisis started. It's not over. It clearly is not over. Frontline with PBS has been around for decades. Fantastic journalism for a long time. They're taking another look at the Flint crisis. I'll just read the headline here. New Frontline documentary exclusively reveals the unreported toll of the Flint water crisis and how government officials failed to stop it. It is a story that is well worth discussing. It is still a story that I don't quite understand why it doesn't get even more publicity. Abby Ellis is with us from Frontline to talk about this. Abby, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. I think most people remember how it started, but you obviously know this extraordinarily well. Remind people how this all began.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So around 2014, there was this push to get the city of Flint off of the Detroit water supply where they've been pumping in water and to join a new pipeline. And this new pipeline was supposed to bring a lot of money to the city and surrounding counties. And while it hadn't been constructed yet, Flint decided to join the pipeline, but needed a place to go in the interim. And so what a lot of people might not remember is that Flint, this is pretty unique to Michigan. Flint was under state control, so it had a state official in charge of all of its finances.
Why was that? Why was the state in charge?
That's something that the governor, former Governor Snyder of Michigan, is kind of known for. He is pretty obsessed with balancing the budget, and so he would appoint officials to cities across the state where the budget needed to be balanced. And their job was to make cuts. And in this case, you could argue make cuts at all costs. So they're the ones who decide to switch Flint to the river to allegedly save money before they join this new pipeline. And what we found is that there were employees at the water treatment plant who knew that the plant wasn't ready to turn on. It hadn't been operating full-time in half a century, and that they voiced these concerns to their supervisors. But because the state officials were in charge, they ignored the guys at the plant and decided to push forward anyway.
So these supervisors who became aware of it, did they actually reach out to the right people at the state and those people just dismissed it, or they did not know who to get a hold of?
Yeah, from what we know, they reached out to the right people. They reached out to the regulators, the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, and they're in charge of, you know, they're the ones that determine whether or not the plant is operable. And they also reached out to the director of the Department of Public Works, who answered to the state official who was in charge at the time. And so a lot of this came out in court testimony during the preliminary exam hearings last year. But there were a number of people who toured the plant and who spoke to the supervisors at the plant that testified the plant wasn't ready.
And so this is happening, and fairly soon after, people started realizing something wasn't right, and people started getting very sick.
Right, and I think what most people might remember about the water crisis is the brown water coming out of faucets.
Yep.
And that actually didn't happen until a bit later. But the outbreak of Legionnaire's disease that we've been reporting on started almost immediately. And Legionnaire's is sort of this, you know, more of this like silent killer, right? You don't necessarily get it from drinking. You can't see it in the water. It doesn't have a color. But if it's in the water, you can get it from taking a hot steamy shower or running through the sprinkler, stuff like that.
Abby Ellis is with us from Frontline. The Frontline documentary premieres about Flint, and they're reporting for 2 years. It premieres tonight, 9 o'clock our time, Channel 2, for a lot of people here in town. For folks who are listening on podcasts and on radio.com, we encourage you to listen on radio.com. Find it in your PBS station nearby. So when you put in the work and your team put in the work for these 2 years, you know there's been a lot of reporting. This idea of Legionnaire's disease fairly soon, is that typical of what you felt like you wanted to report, which already had not been reported?
So the Legionnaire's outbreak had been reported. It was reported, you know, with the official numbers the state gave. So the state said that 12 people died and 90 people were sick. But what we knew at the time was that no thorough investigation was ever done, not by the county, the state health department, or even the CDC. And what we've learned in our work is that from experts in infectious disease, if an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease is happening and nobody knows about it in the medical community or the public, it's likely that cases go undiagnosed. And you can't treat Legionella with the same antibiotics you can treat standard bacterial pneumonia with. And so if you go to the hospital with these symptoms of pneumonia, a doctor may not know that there's an outbreak of Legionnaire's, may not test you for it, and you might die, and all it will say on your death certificate is pneumonia. So we test ourselves with uncovering how many additional deaths there might be.
And that's where you brought in different scientists. That is different from what other outlets had done, correct?
Correct. And another thing is some scientists came forward in our film who previously not about their interactions with the state and how they felt the state obstructed their investigation into the outbreak.
You also looked at the criminality of this, and this part has been covered, but you wanted to look at it in a different way. This was another situation where, I mean, it's only heightened by an enormous amount by the folks who lived it every day. But I think a lot of us from afar were shocked by this, by sickened and saying, listen, this is happening in a city of some size. It's happening in America. This shouldn't be happening, even though Flint's population had dropped dramatically, and that's probably part of the state control. But just looking at why more people weren't charged and why a number of charges were recently dropped.
Yeah, so that is something that I think everyone who's reported on this is trying to understand at this point. The former special prosecutor had charged 15 people, and he had been investigating this for 3 years. I think they spent like $30 million of taxpayer money, both the defense and the prosecution. And the political landscape in Michigan changed. A Democrat came in, and they dropped all of the charges and fired the former special prosecutor. So, you know, we've spoken to both sides, and the new prosecutor says that, you know, they dropped charges without prejudice, meaning she can recharge if they so wish. But there is a statute of limitation, and the clock is ticking, and it's a really big investigation. So time will tell. We have no idea where this is going.
Okay, are people suggesting there are corrupt ways, or that there's something, clearly there's some reason that doesn't make sense why these charges were dropped, and a lot of people are trying to figure that out. What signs are there so far? Because this just seems like an absolute layup to prosecute so many people who caused, I mean, people died because of this. And as your reporting points out, people knew about it and did nothing. How are people not facing decades behind bars because of what they did in a large American city?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is something that we'll hopefully keep reporting out, but it's very confusing. And all we know is what the new prosecutor has told us. That's it. And all she's told us is that they've come into new evidence and that the previous prosecution was fundamentally flawed. However, it's important to note that the previous special prosecutor did get the state's chief medical executive and the former health director bound over on charges of involuntary manslaughter, and they were ready to go before a jury. So, you know, it's very, you know, we're all wondering what was the motive. The only difference you can really point to between the two parties is their political affiliation, really. This is a team of Democrats, and they just fired a team of people who worked under a Republican. That's it. We really don't know.
It looks like just incredibly partisan decision, which has taken people off the hook, at least so far. Last thing, Abby Ellis from Frontline, again, this very interesting and thought-provoking documentary on Flint, Michigan, What Happened, debuts tonight, 9 o'clock. How is Flint today?
Flint is okay, but people are still getting bottled water. People still don't trust the water. People are still suffering from illnesses they got because of the water contamination. And people are wondering when they're going to be taken care of and compensated for the injuries they sustained during the water crisis.
Well, I'm glad you raised it. How much money have people received for what happened to them?
As far as I understand, they've received no money.
No money. You know,
at least the people we know, they've received no money.
That's another thing that makes absolutely no sense at this point.
Right.
Abby, I really enjoyed the conversation. Looking forward to watching it tonight, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. 246. This is an American city, okay? This is not tolerable anywhere. Let me be clear about this. But why the hell couldn't this happen in an American city in Minnesota or somewhere else? Look at what's going on in Newark right now. And the idea that people lost their lives, people knew about this, that then very few criminal charges, at least at this point, no payments, and that people are better, but not all the way back, and still suspect in their water in Michigan, not too far from us, is just inexplicable, and it is, there's no excuse at all. 246, Linda's Construction Time Check. Time to call for 50% off installation labor on Infinity by Marvin Windows. Tomorrow, some of our regular segments, Jason DeRussia, he is at 12:35 playing politics, John Rash, and another member of the Star Tribune editorial board. And then we both saw this writer. Is it Garrett Graff?
Correct.
Okay, Garrett Graff has been working for a long time on a book on 9/11, including an oral history on the day of, and then follow up with a lot of families and what happened to them.
Right.
We're real fortunate because the book is receiving a lot of play, and he's coming out with us tomorrow at 2:35. Mm-hmm. So we are very pleased on that. Because we are 18 years after when the murders of 3,000 some took place. So for a lot of people, it feels like it was 5 minutes ago. For others, it feels like it was, you know, years and years ago. And, I mean, we had two angles we were going for. We saw this, then because there was so much discussion this year about the funding, mm-hmm. And the endless number of police officers and firefighters who descended upon that area, stayed there for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and the extraordinary amount of money that is needed to take care of them, and then how visible it became again, and it became a political fight. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name who was there right with John Stewart, who said, I'm here as opposed to my 63rd form of chemo today, mm-hmm. to hear, and then he died a couple weeks later. You had Stewart going after Rand Paul, because Rand Paul, who, to his defense, has been more insistent on pay attention to the debt and deficit than others, where Stewart was basically, this is where you're drawing the line. This is when you're trying to be strong enough on this one. The bill passed. We're going to look at how that fund is actually working right now, now that the funding has been addressed for a long time. So either would have been a very good idea, but I'm looking forward to our conversation with Garrett. And again, that'll be tomorrow at 2:35. A story that we both saw earlier, Dan. A court has denied parents custody of their 4-year-old son with cancer after the Florida couple did what? Speaking of chemotherapy, they stopped chemotherapy treatments each year. The judge announced a ruling to the parents. Their son was diagnosed with this form of leukemia in early of 2019. They stopped the chemotherapy 2 days into the treatment. The child will remain in the custody of grandparents. However, the state does still have the option of returning custody to parents in the future. Instead of chemo, the parents turned to medical marijuana and CBD oil. The mom spoke to a number of media outlets about a month ago and said he had vicious mood swings, making him violent, making him emotional, and also started to lose his hair right away after the first treatment. They took Noah to Kentucky, where they sought a second opinion. The sheriff's office asked Popek for help to locate the family after they failed to bring him to the hospital for medical necessary procedure. The parents, by the way, were found 1 week later, and the state of Florida placed Noah in the custody of the grandparents. We get in this debate a lot, Dan, on vaccines, right? Right. Where I think people are basically just lying to you regarding science. They're 100%, Andrew Wakefield, obviously, the leader, lying to you. I don't doubt for a second that we have many, many families who believe this with their mind and their heart, that they brought their son in, their daughter in, for a vaccine, and the child changed. The overwhelming science said it's not because of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to defer to the science. And when we have children who are then put in harm's way, or when you have other kids who are in the midst of their vaccines and are not fully covered, I'm going to protect them. And so we then have the slippery slope debate.
Right.
Right. Where is the line? Where is the line if you and your wife, your partner, have kids, when can the government step in? Okay, I am one on this show who's spoken out my belief in medicinal marijuana and CBD oil, and I fear what we've done with the opioids and how we've killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. So this is not just an automatic, no matter what, pharmaceuticals. But you know what? When it's a 4-year-old kid who has chemotherapy, and the parents are deciding against this treatment, and society can either say, you got two choices, right?
Yeah.
You can either say, parents, their call, we can't step in, or guess what? We're going to go with the normal, accepted, medically proven, scientifically proven, and we are going to attempt to save the kid this way. I get where we could go. I'm dealing with this particular case. I fall into the slippery slope occasionally. I try to push back on it often, because this is a case when I am 100% fine with this judge stepping in. And oh, by the way, if you think the kid's somewhere and nobody knows him, he's with the grandparents.
Right. Yeah, it's not like they're putting him in foster care or anything like
no.
that. No. You know, your heart goes out to the parents, because I can't imagine what it must be like to watch your child go through chemotherapy treatments.
Yeah.
So, you know, heart does go out to them in that
yep.
regard. But you can't do – I mean, you can't do this. You can't. You just can't. I understand that that's difficult, and I understand that it's heartbreaking, but you can't turn that into, well, we're just going to go try this other stuff where there's no evidence this actually cures cancer, and then, you know, the kids will take his chances.
Yeah, your number one responsibility when you're a parent is to keep your kid in the most healthy situation as possible. And many times it's beyond your means. You find out your kid has leukemia, has cancer, has a brain tumor, is on the spectrum, you name it, and you can only do so much, right? But when you're now picking something, when there's 0.0% proof that medicinal marijuana is going to fight off leukemia, I think the judge would have been derelict in his duty if he did not do it. Thanks for listening. Twins tonight. Let me correct myself, too, from earlier. H Lake first pitch is at 5:30 because the Twins game starts at 6:40 tonight.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.